Welcome to Trainers Talking Truths. This is an ISSA podcast dedicated to exploring the fitness industry and uncovering the whys and hows of personal training. To do that, we'll talk directly to the industry experts and certified trainers. We'll dig into fitness programming, business tactics, nutrition, and more. You'll even hear from current training clients who offer insight from the other side. We've got the fitness industry covered, so turn up the volume and enjoy the drive. Hello, world, and welcome back for another ISSA podcast, Trainers Talking Truths. It's your co-host, Jenny Liebel, here with my co-host, Mr. John Bauer. What's up, John?
Excited for this one again, Jenny. And here's why. We talk a lot about leadership and finding mentors to help you focus your energy and your passion in this industry. And I've had many over the years. I've had the opportunity to come in contact with some great leaders in our industry. And today's guest is just one of those. In fact, he is a leader of leaders as a part of what he does in his daily business. So I'm excited to really get into that and really kind of expand on how you all listeners can learn from someone like him to focus your energies and find your path in this business.
Yeah. And I'm super excited to explore, yes, the mentorship aspect of it, but the fact that there's so many people out there who think that fitness, we just all wake up and we're just like, okay, we know what we're doing. It's not the case. I don't know any industry that's like that. So I love that there are opportunities for leaders and people in an industry like they do with fitness to get together and bounce ideas off of each other and say, hey, I see this as a glaring gap in what we do, or I think there's an opportunity over here. How can we solve for this? And people are really working together. And I always like to call out, John, think about when we all started in the industry. Like, our guests started back in the late 80s. You started in the 90s. I started in the 2000s. Like, fitness looked so different on our day one. It looked so different 5 years later. It looks different now. It's evolving and it's constantly evolving. It takes people like our guests today to get it to evolve and to really implement things that are impactful. So who do we have here with us today?
Well, our guest today is industry leader Justin Tamsip. Welcome to the show.
Lady and gentlemen, thank you.
I'm glad you're here. And I would love for you to go ahead and introduce yourself to our listeners and tell them about what got you into the industry and how you've evolved over the years to being here on our podcast today.
Well, firstly, I'm going to take you two on a world tour with me because that was a great introduction and I don't really need to say much more. That was fantastic. Jenny, I feel very old when you say you started in the industry in the 2000s. John, you're just a little pup, and that makes me with my Zimmer frame starting back in the 80s. Look, I'll be honest with all the listeners. I was at college learning to be a phys ed teacher, and all your listeners that were at college will probably admit at some stage they had an alcohol problem at college where alcohol dominated more than actually showing up to lectures. So I had to weigh up, would I get a job in a bar and drink the profits, or would I get a job somewhere else to get me through college? And I actually chose to get a job in a gym. And in the 80s, we had these, they're almost extinct now. They used to roam the earth like dinosaurs, and they were called gym instructors. And so these gym instructors, their role was to usually do some sort of barrage of fitness testing for a brand new member when they joined the gym. What that meant was telling an unfit person how unfit they really were, and then write them a program, and they would follow that on the gym floor. And when you weren't doing that, you were walking the gym floor, supposedly talking to members and cleaning equipment. Of course, you did talk to members in the 80s, but I was a hormone-infused 19-year-old, so there was probably only one sex that I dominated the conversations with on the gym floor.
Partial.
Mm-hmm. that often came up in my annual reviews. Can you start talking to the men instead of just the ladies out on the gym floor? But that's kind of where it all started. And I always tell this story, which I think many of your listeners will liken in their lives. I had a lady come and I had to do a fitness test on her, and her name was Fiona. And I won't go into how hard the fitness test actually was because she was so overweight. But she was a motivated individual. Her husband had just left her for a younger, sleeker model. And she'd spent pretty much the last 15 years of her life bringing up her kids, supporting her husband while his career was taking off. And she really put herself second. And as a result, her weight and her health came second. And they split up. She joined the gym. And what I saw over the ensuing 3 years of her membership and while I worked at that particular gym was a lady that went from morbidly obese back to the size and the weight that she was when she got married. And to see that morphous change, I worked out that that's the industry that I wanted to be in.
That's awesome. Very cool. Did you always work in gyms and health clubs, or did you ever branch out on your own or do anything like that?
Well, Jenny, funny you say that, because I read a book in 1990 by Dr. Douglas Brooks called Going Solo. And that book talked about becoming a personal trainer. Before personal training was really personal training as we know it today. Mm-hmm. So I had a crack at starting a personal training business. And what Dr. Douglas Brooks did not tell me in that book is that I should come up with the name of my business that people could say and pronounce. So the name of my business was called The Physical Epitome, which is E-P-I-T-O-M-E.
Yeah.
The number of people that called it the physical epitome or epitome was far greater than the people that called it the physical epitome.
I love that.
So my T-shirts, my business cards, my letterhead, I even had stickers made with the local radio station that said the radio station rocks the physical epitome ready for all my clients. That was a schoolboy era, that one. So I had a crack at personal training. But again, to be open and transparent with your listeners, it didn't float my boat. I didn't love personal training because we didn't have mobile phones back then. So clients wouldn't show up and you'd be just waiting on the street, waiting for them to arrive, and they just wouldn't come. So you had to wait. You know, again, listeners, there used to be these things back in the early 90s called landlines. So you had to wait the next day to call someone on a landline to find out where they were from the previous day. But, yeah, for whatever reason, I loved watching people get results, but personal training just, I don't know, it just didn't work for me. And I think I was, when you analyze personality profiles, I was probably back then a very much a high D personality, if you're thinking about a DISC principle for behaviors. And because of that, that didn't really match with that career.
Sure.
Which was weird, but in retrospect, I think that was probably the case.
Yeah. So how did you end up evolving in the industry, still in it, but maybe not doing those like one-on-one in the gym sessions?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because even though I didn't really love PT, I loved being the gym instructor. So I started as a gym instructor, had the personal training business, and then I'm not sure how Americans say this, but in Australia, I think they identified that I had the art of bullshit.
No, that translates perfectly.
Yeah, that translates.
So they moved me into sales, and I became a salesperson, then a club manager, then a single club owner, a multi-club owner, back to a single club owner, then an unemployed club owner. And for anybody that is listening, when you're unemployed in the fitness industry and you love the fitness industry, you then become a business coach. So then I did some business coaching, and then from there morphed into becoming a Rex Roundtables chair. And along the way, of course, I was the cleaner of the club. I taught group fitness. I worked on the front desk. I think the only job I never did, and I'm not sure why I never did it, but it was I never worked in childcare within my gym.
So you've definitely been there and done that in the industry. And I want to highlight a couple of things. Thank you again for sharing your story. You said that you didn't love personal training. And I can relate to that a little bit. Although I've done 15 to 20,000 personal training sessions in my career, what I found during that time was that I loved education. I loved helping to develop and deliver education. So there's a lot of room in this industry for different paths. And I think through a little bit of trial and error, you found your path. And then also for our listeners who have it easy these days, where we just tell you things like business and branding are important, you had to learn the hard way that a little branding can go a long way. And you learned again the hard way by, I forget what the name of your company was, the Fitness Epitome or something like that? Physical Epitome?
Physical
Epitome. No, it was called the Physical Epitome.
Oh, the Epitome. That's right. That's right. Okay. So it's thanks to people like you that learned some of those lessons the hard way that you are now able to teach those lessons to our new and future business people and fitness business people, I should say. You know, given
John,
that you've been
in. Can I just stop you there? Oh, yeah, I think one of the business lessons for everybody is fail fast.
Mm.
You know, when I was a PT and I thought that's what I wanted to do. And sure, I invested money in, like I said, the collateral for the brand. I worked out pretty quick that that's not what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So I got out of it. Rather than sticking with something and grinding on doing something that I didn't like, I knew I wanted to be in the fitness industry. I just had to work out what seat on the fitness industry bus I wanted to be on. So I failed really quickly and moved on. And I think that happens whether it's in relationships with people or whether that's in business or whether that's in life, is that sometimes we grind and we grind, which then means we resent what we do. So for our, you know, for your listeners, if you start to resent the job but you love the industry, then just find another seat on the bus, because our industry loves people who are passionate about helping others and changing people's lives through health and fitness. And as you just alluded to, there's so many jobs that are available inside our industry, from working with ISSA on education to being involved with marketing or selling gym equipment. It is an industry now like it's never been before, with so many opportunities. But don't grind and hate the industry. Fail quickly and move on to and find something that you really love.
I love it. That's great advice.
Yeah, that's a great insight. Fail fast rather than building that resentment. Like you said, I do love that. So that kind of leads me into kind of my next question. I think of you as someone that has a lot of valuable insights, and I think that's a fantastic one to fail fast. Now, what about those people who have taken the step toward getting into business and maybe starting their own personal training business, maybe even opening a brick and mortar? What sorts of insights would you give to someone who's brand new to it, who is very passionate about it, but maybe not as business savvy?
Ask for help is number one. Mm-hmm. You've probably got some people who ask for help, and that's divine intervention in some of their clubs. And I do say that with the utmost seriousness, that, you know, sometimes we need to pray that we can get our business up and running, because it is hard work. You know, the odds are generally stacked against small business being successful when we look at the data across entire industries, not just the fitness industry. So I think that the challenge for all of us is we get into the industry because we either love working out, we love helping people, but running a business is a completely different skill set. And I know when I did my initial qualifications and accreditation, we did a 9-day course and we learned everything about anatomy and physical and moving and blah, 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 blah. But as I said, it was 2 years later that I read a book about how to run a business. So I think the number one thing is really get your teeth into and asking for help on how to run a business. And if you can set your business up from the beginning as a business, then it will lead to success further down the track. If it's a hobby or it's a kitchen table business, I think it's inevitable that it will fold. If it's a boardroom that you're meeting in, and that's a metaphoric boardroom, then you're far more successful. The analogy that I always make, particularly when people are starting off in their business, is that they usually, and you guys would have been there, done that as well, is that you're a part-time trainer and you're a part-time bartender or worker in a boutique. And all of a sudden, you're just not quite getting enough clients. But the owner of the boutique or the owner of the bar says, can I give you some more shifts? Because we need some more shifts covered. And you go, well, I need the money. Yeah, I'll do that. And before you know it, like a teeter-totter, from where you were a full-time trainer and a part-time bartender, you're now a full-time bartender and a part-time gym instructor, and eventually you're not a PT at all. So you've got to be realistic in where your business heads and when you're going to get to the numbers. But I think asking for help to be able to get there is critical.
Yeah, I think John's highlighted that a couple of times before in the couple of years that I've known him, is people who want to do part-time training. Sure, it can be done, but to your point, it's something where if you're not putting your full effort towards it, it's never going to become a full-time thing. It's something that you kind of have to dig into it. But Justin, you make a great point. You just have to be realistic with how long is it going to take me to get to the income or the numbers that I'm trying to get to. But wouldn't you guys both agree that you have to understand what does that number even look like for you first? And I think a lot of people don't even think about how much money do I need to make? Have you ever looked at your bills and like added them all up to say, oh my gosh, I have this much going out. Chance, if I want to make this a career, I need to at least make that. Right. Most people haven't even started there. But yeah, I think you both have made that point that you have to put your full energy and attention into it. Otherwise, it will become part time. And eventually, to your point, Justin, no time. And then it's just something you did in the past.
And Jenny, using an example that the listeners would understand, if I want to run a marathon, I kind of start at the time that I want to finish and then work backwards with my training plan to be able to ensure that I finish that marathon or power lift or whatever that triathlon, whatever it happens to be. I work backwards from that date that event's going to be on and roughly how I want to finish, and then I write my plan to get there. Business is exactly the same. And sometimes it is a marathon too in business.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's a story as old as time, trainers trying to part-time their way to a full-time successful career. I've seen it many times over the years, and I've lost some good trainers over the years because of that. But again, you make some great points. We got to put some focus and we got to have some strategy about how we are going to run our business. So again, I love that. And hopefully you listeners take that to heart, because again, if you want, business is hard in the first place. Doing it with half your energy makes it even more difficult.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things, John, also is many trainers graduate with their ISSA qualifications to be able to go and be a trainer. And they think the only place to be a trainer is in their garage or in their park. I honestly believe that the best place for anyone who's a fresh grad is in a gym.
Agreed.
Where they are an employed personal trainer, because they have that infrastructure behind them for anywhere from 6 to 12 to 24 months, where they can cut their teeth and they can learn how to be a trainer. They can watch from the sidelines on how a business is run. Then they can graduate, if you will, in their career to going to work for themselves. I find too many trainers want to leap straight into the deep end of running their own business without having that business acumen behind them. And I understand that you know, everybody wants to win the gold medal at the Olympics, but every single gold medalist learned to crawl, then walk, then run, then sprint, then eventually get through their college and make the Olympics. There are steps to becoming a professional athlete. There are steps to becoming a professional trainer or business person. So if you're naturally gifted, you move through those steps a lot more quickly as an athlete. And if you're naturally entrepreneurial, you'll move quickly. But if you're not naturally entrepreneurial, it's okay to be an employed trainer.
Not only okay, I think for me, again, this would be my opinion, but it's an educated opinion. I think it's the preferred way for a lot of people to just kind of see what the industry's like. You know, when you finish medical school, you don't just get to start doing surgeries right away, right? Like, you have to be around it for a while. You have to learn from people who've been there and done that. And what a great way to learn anything is learn from people who've already been there and done that, can help you to maybe avoid some mistakes or help you to be more efficient or make better choices. So I couldn't agree with you more. You mentioned earlier something about Rex Roundtables, and I want to get into that a little bit. First of all, what are Rex Roundtables? Let's start there.
I think that, well, first off, they were the best thing I ever did when I owned my club. I joined a Rex Roundtable, and it completely transformed my business and my life because of what they are. And, you know, I found Rex Religion, and now I'm the Rex Chair. In simple terms, there are 15 to 18 non-competing business owners that come together every 4 months, so three times a year, for 2.5 days to focus on the business side of things. Historically, it's been club owners and general managers. But as the industry has changed, and Jenny, you alluded to that right at the beginning, it has changed considerably. Well, we now have a PT managers Rex Roundtable, which is obviously where we met, John. We have a Group X managers roundtable. We have sales and marketing. We have GMs. In 2023, we launched our Iron Maidens roundtable, which is for females in the industry who are leaders. We also have an industry suppliers roundtable. We operate in US, Europe, and Australia, and it's a peer-to-peer support mechanism that drives conversations to take deep dives on projects. And I think, you know, one of the challenges is we want to always improve our efficiencies and our effectiveness in business, because that saves us money and it saves us time and saves us resources. So the beauty of the roundtable is that you can come in and you can say, here's my challenge. And there's guaranteed that there's going to be someone in the room on your roundtable who's been through that challenge already and can shortcut your journey. So roundtable's perfect opportunity for somebody who wants to speed up the process but is not too proud to ask for help.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely makes sense.
Yeah. So I love that the groups are kind of separated out and that you have a women's group. But I love that the groups are separated out by specialty, because as we know, like a fitness facility, for example, let's start there. There's a lot of elements of a fitness facility. It's not just personal training, right? There's all kinds of aspects of it. And if you're in one element of a fitness club, doesn't mean your hands are in the other element. And they kind of operate independently. So I like that those are separated. And so this is, Justin, this is people from all over the world that got together. I mean, you're in Australia right now. John and I are in the US. Like, is it people that are all over the world and they meet virtually?
No. That's an interesting question that you asked, Jenny. When COVID hit, we started meeting one of the groups that I lead in the US. We met on Zoom, didn't we, John? And we would.
That's right.
You know, it was almost like therapy for everybody. Once every 2 weeks and once a month. But we now meet face to face, and there is enormous power when you're pressing the flesh with other humans.
Yeah,
there is a place for virtual. I get it, and I would never challenge that. But there's also another place, and it builds human connection through touch when you're with somebody. So what we find is the conversations are deeper, the level of trust is deeper when you're face-to-face. So those meetings are face-to-face for 2.5 days, which means you can't alt-tab and look at Facebook at the same time while you're in the meeting.
Fair. And I mean, there is something to be said for that, like being engaged and being in that same room with people, having those face-to-face connections. And at the core, that is what the fitness industry was built on, right? Is those in-person connections. And of course, it's branched into online and stuff where you don't even have to see your trainer, right? I've had a couple of trainers where I worked with them completely by email, and I know what they look like because I've seen their social media, but they don't often post about themselves. So do I really know what they look like? Probably not. He could walk right by me and I wouldn't know who he was, right? And there's something to be said for that personal element of the fitness industry. So I agree.
Yeah. No, 100%.
And I just wanted to mention, as Justin said, that's Rex Roundtables is how we met. I was on a table for a year, and I did have the opportunity to do one face-to-face in North Carolina before COVID hit. And, you know, we talk about mentorship and asking for help. And sometimes when you get to the level of a VP of fitness or director of fitness, you know, for you listeners, you might think that those people have made it. But as it turns out, there's still a lot to learn. And sometimes you don't have as many peers to talk to. You're busy managing people and being the leader. So it was helpful in that way, in that you can continue the journey of getting mentorship and help. I'm lucky enough that I got that early in my career, and it was great to be able to get it further on in my career, even at that level. And, you know, wouldn't you know it, once again, I learned the lesson that I wasn't nearly as smart as I thought I was. There was a lot of smart people in that room, and I did happen to learn a lot of good lessons, learn some great strategies. And like you said, Justin, sometimes it ended up being kind of a support group for people who are business leaders.
I think that's, you know, sometimes, John, I think we forget that we're humans. Mm-hmm. And so as a business leader or owner, whether you're a PT in the park, whether you're a PT manager, or whether you're a club manager or club owner, you're a human at the end of the day. And when you are in one of these peer-to-peer support groups, it's beyond business. It's family, and people support you through those challenges, because what we see as entrepreneurs more often than not, that the business bleeds into our life. And when we're with other peers, they teach us to be able to compartmentalize business and our life so that our life is not as heavily impacted by our business. Because your business can be going down the toilet, but your life can be going up. And if it bleeds, then you're in a world of trouble. So so there's that really powerful support mechanism of peer-to-peer who I say who probably walked the miles in the same runners as you have.
Yeah, I love it. And I think our listeners can tell you have quite a bit of business experience and some really good advice for people who want to start their own business. And speaking of, I hear you also have a podcast, the Fitness Business Podcast. Tell us a little bit about that podcast, some of the things that maybe you highlight in some of your episodes. And do you have like some key lessons that you like to teach a lot of people in the fitness industry?
Well, I think we were one of the first sort of podcasts in the industry. And what inspired me is the education side of things, but making it accessible for people and making it a bite-sized chunk. And look, you know, a magician should never explain how he does his tricks, but to peer behind the magic curtain, my goal was to have a podcast that would help me get business coaching clients in Australia. And what I found, Jenny, is that a podcast is global, and I didn't know that when we first started. Now it's bleedingly obvious that it's global. We have 65% of our downloads actually come from the US, and only 20-something percent are now from Australia. I think the other part of – so that's why we started it, is to make learning accessible for people in bite-sized chunks. And that was 8-9 years ago. I think the success of our podcast was always that we kept to our lane.
Yeah.
And our lane was business education. So we would have people come on, and there was no sales pitches. So we would have people come on who came on specifically to educate people. And so when somebody joined and listened to our podcast, they knew what they were getting before they had to listen. They knew this is going to be education. They're not going to be selling me shit at the end of this. This is genuine education. So I think that's one reason we became successful. Another one is we looked at data a lot, and we found that, and I don't know how long we've been talking, but we found that the average commute time in the US is about 18 minutes. So the podcast interviews lasted 18 minutes. So the actual show was 30 minutes, but if you just sped up and only wanted the interview, it would be 18 minutes. And we also learned, like, I didn't really want to do this, to be frank. I wanted to do a podcast like once a month or once every 2 weeks. And we spoke to an expert at the time, and she said, you've got to do it every week. I'm like, you've just doubled my work. And she said, yes, I know, but to create stickiness so people keep coming back, you've got to do that. So that's what we did. And we always tried so hard that once a month we would have someone from outside the industry. We would try to find an author who had a lesson that was relevant to the industry. They were the coolest people because they were really prepared. They were professional speakers generally as well. And the content that they delivered was exceptional. So, you know, I think this is the key, that a podcast has to stay in its lane so people know what they're going to get when they tune into your podcast. It's a great way to build your brand. It's a great way to build your ego. Is it necessarily a great way to market? In hindsight, I probably would have invested slightly differently from a marketing perspective, mm-hmm. but from a branding perspective, it's probably better than anything else.
That's awesome.
I'm over here taking notes. 18 minutes. Got it. You know, we've talked a lot of big picture stuff here today, and I want our listeners to be able to maybe walk away with something kind of tangible and actionable. So for all our professionals and entrepreneurs out there who are thinking about starting a business or maybe recently started a business, what are a couple of pieces of actionable advice that you would offer for those people who are still kind of in the mix of trying to figure it out?
Well, for your listeners, I like to exceed expectations straight from the beginning. So you're not going to get two. I'm going to give you seven.
Let's go. I'm ready.
Well, firstly, you got to join a Rex Roundtable, or you got to work for a company that's a Rex member. There's my plug. Number two, I think, is a really important one, and it's truly understand why you do what you do. The Simon Sinek book, Start With Why, the golden circles that he talks about, where people follow, buy from people where they truly understand why they do what they do rather than what they do. And when we talk to most people in our industry, when they first are kicking off, they're passionate about health and fitness. They want to change people's lives. That's the outer layer of the onion. You need to peel the onion back a bit more to actually identify why you're passionate about helping people, why you love the health and fitness industry. And when you find that core reason of why, that's the thing that gets you out of bed when it's 0 degrees in Chicago and the wind is blowing and you don't want to have to go outside. But when you understand your why, that helps. When that why builds your resilience in your business when times are tough.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, really important one, is do what you say you'll do. It's important that you build trust with the people that you work with, whether they're your customers or whether they are fellow team members or your community. And too many times I hear trainers and I hear entrepreneurs say they're going to do something. And you would have heard it, John, with trainers that worked for you. And Jenny, you would have seen this in trainers that work around you where they say, I'll flick you a diet plan for you to be able to use while you're on holidays. And they never do. Mm-hmm. Now, I simplified that. But you can multiply that out over so many different aspects of the business. As soon as you don't deliver what you say you were going to deliver, you break trust. And it's harder to make trust back up once you've broken it. So there's my tip number three, do what you say you'll do. Slightly different one, number four, I learned a lot from volunteering for my industry associations and industry bodies. So being a representative member of my industry, where I started as a committee member and became a president of our associations, but volunteering in that area allowed me to meet a lot of people, but allowed me to get a very holistic view of the industry. So that would be another tip that I would give. Number five, connect. Really, networking is the contact sport of the 2020s. You have to get out. You got to meet people in the industry because you want to learn from them. I would not be doing this podcast with you guys if I hadn't connected with you, John. So connections lead to opportunities. So you've got to be prepared to connect. Number six, drop the ego. You don't know everything. You never know everything. And the day that you know everything, well, I'm not sure that day should ever come. So I heard at an IRSA presentation many, many years ago, this saying, and it stuck with me. You can be green and growing, or you can be ripe and rotting. So while you're a green apple on a tree, you are growing. But as soon as you fall off that tree, you're now on the ground and you will rot. So you have a choice, green and growing or ripe and rotting. Drop the ego and always be prepared to learn from people and experiences. And then my last one is this is a kind of philosophical one, I guess, is that from my perspective, ideas don't change the world. We can have as many ideas about getting people moving. We can have as many ideas as we want about changing the health of our nations through physical activity or our communities. Ideas don't change the world. Actions change the world. So I want people to have a crack. Don't worry if you fail. We talked about that at the beginning. You fail fast, you move on. Every failure just gets you closer to success. So you just have a crack. Actions change the world. And that's what I would encourage all of your entrepreneurial listeners to do, is just get out, have a crack, and do the best that you can. And don't worry about what's on the other side.
Well, thank you for that. And for your listeners, rewind, listen to that. That's a nice playbook of kind of rules to live by when trying to increase your reach. If you're trying to increase your notoriety, if you're trying to live with a sense of service and purpose as well, all of those rules are a great, great playbook for doing all of those things. So please do take that to heart, because every single one of those things resonated with me because I've had a part in doing all those things, including being a part of a Rex Roundtable. And again, all of those things individually can be great, but I think when you are able to do all of those things together, you're setting yourself up for potential success. So please do listen to that part again, write it down, take some notes. Me and Jenny were over here taking notes. Yep. because that was all really, really good stuff from someone who's helped a lot of leaders out there in the industry.
Yeah. You had me with the green and growing or ripe and rotting. Oh, that's a good one. That's a really, really good one. Always be learning. And you're absolutely right. The time that comes that you know everything shouldn't ever happen. And I don't think it's ever happened for anybody in the history of the world. So yeah. I love that. Very, very cool. So speaking of the Rex Roundtables, and for you, Justin, you are so insightful and you have a really cool way of teaching things. Like, I can tell that you're an educator, because I feel like educators that are good at what they do have just a way of communicating things where people go, huh, that makes sense. And you have that. You has this. How can our listeners reach you and also learn more about the Rex Roundtables?
Well, I would love to say check out our website, rexroundtables.com, but it's a terrible website, but still check it out. You know, we're like the plumber who has the leaky tap. You know, you go and fix everybody else's taps, but you don't actually fix your own tap. So check out the website, but it's not a great website. You can find me on any socials. I'm under Active Management, but I am not the Canadian modeling company Active Management.
Fair.
You know, you guys can see us doing this interview. People are listening to this, so you guys understand why it's not the Canadian modeling company. But, you know, the easiest way probably is to connect with me on LinkedIn. Again, for all of your entrepreneurial listeners, LinkedIn, the professionals, Facebook is an incredible platform for you to grow your professional network. And why don't you start by looking up Justin Tamsett and saying in your personalizing your message in that connection, I heard you on the ISSA podcast and I'd love to connect. And then that starts a conversation for us. So that's where I would suggest most people go and develop that network virtually for their own professional network as well.
Nice. Are you going to help people like update their LinkedIn profile?
Maybe their photos. I might tell them to wear shirts if they're male trainers.
Fair. So go for the air towards the more professional side versus the fitness side. I like it. I hear you, Justin. I hear you. Very cool. Well, John, any other takeaways that you want to highlight today as we wrap it up?
Yeah, I feel like I just got to pick one because there's a lot that resonated with me. But I think one that really kind of stuck out was when you said ideas don't change the world. Actions do. And as a person that fits into the mold of the classic overthinker, that's a lesson that I have had to learn many times over, is at some point thinking about it isn't going to get anything done. And you got to go out there and try, knowing that you might fail. But to your point earlier, if you try sooner, you can fail sooner and move on from that idea and start making the next idea. So that part really resonated with me.
Yeah, same, John, that fail fast and move on. And I think back to not only my fitness career, but before fitness, fun fact, I used to own a dog daycare. And we had it for a couple of years right before 2008. Those of you guys who know what happened in 2008, like everything crashed, right? And the market crashed, people stopped traveling. And with a dog daycare, daycare is good, but you make your money boarding. People stopped boarding their dogs, right? They would send them to their friend, or my friend's going to come to my house and watch them. So we sold. And I remember I was so devastated that it didn't work out, right? And then that's actually what brought me to fitness. So I wouldn't change it for the world. But if the faster you can get through, okay, this didn't work, and move on, the faster you can move on. And here I am, how many years now? 14, 16 years later, where like it's a faint mystery, like a faint memory. And my career is where, like, far and beyond where I ever thought it would be. I'm doing things I never thought I would do. And yeah, I look back on that as a learning experience now, but you don't have to sit in that failure for that long. Fail fast and move on. I really liked that one, Justin. Really, really cool. So thank you again for joining us. Do you have any last words for our listeners today?
Just get out and change the world. Just do shit.
That's a t-shirt right there. That's a t-shirt.
Right? I know. I love it. I love it. So yes, go back, you guys. You're going to need to re-listen to this one. Connect with Justin. He has a ton of resources, you guys. If you can get in for a Rex Roundtable, great opportunity to start meeting people. And again, they do it in person. So get that face-to-face contact with other people in this industry and start making a difference. But go out there, do all the things, keep learning, always be learning. Remember, if you're not green and growing, you are ripe and rotting. And above all, you guys, make good choices. We'll be talking to you soon.